evening, ladies and gentlemen. It is... What day is it? January 25th, ladies and gentlemen. I'm a month behind. I happen to be the birthday of a very good friend of mine, and she always said that she was born 1 month after Jesus, and I started thinking it was December 25th. No, it is January 25th, 2007. Well, folks, tonight I'm going to be doing most of the talking. That may delight those of you who love to hear my dulcet tones. And, of course, I'm being facetious. I hate to hear my own voice. A rasping, lisping, grating voice. I don't know how you people tune in and listen to me every night, those of you who do that. But in any case, I'm going to be spending much of the hour tonight talking about a long and complicated and very detailed, but I think very, very interesting story. It's of great personal interest to me. I've written about it extensively, and it's obviously of a little bit of interest to some of the listeners here because I had two callers last night ask me about it, and it's worth talking about it. Although it's history, it's certainly a history of intrigue. It ties into one of the subjects that's been of great interest to a lot of people, and that's the JFK assassination. And I will always say that we wouldn't be where we are today in America if John F. Kennedy had not been assassinated. And, you know, there's a lot of people out there who are promoting this myth that Lyndon Baines Johnson was the grand poobah, the grand wizard behind the JFK assassination. And I'm here to tell you, folks, he wasn't. He probably knew about it in advance. There's a lot of stories out there which indicate that he did. He knew he was going to become president very, very soon. He knew that John F. Kennedy was going to be removed from office. But Lyndon Johnson was not the grand poobah behind the JFK assassination. We are going to be talking about someone who definitely did know what went down with the JFK assassination in Dallas. And I'm not even here to tell you that this particular person was actually involved in plotting JFK's assassination. But because of who he was and where he was and what he was involved with in November of 1963, the late E. Howard Hunt, longtime CIA operative who gained international fame in the mid-1970s as a consequence of his role in the Watergate burglary that resulted in the second political assassination of the 60s and 70s, the assassination of Richard Nixon, which drove him from office. E. Howard Hunt was definitely a man in the know. E. Howard Hunt died just a couple days ago, and as I said last evening, I believe he is now burning in hell. He was not a very nice guy. And, of course, I have a personal axe to grind with E. Howard Hunt because this CIA figure was one of those who did his damnedest, along with his longtime CIA associate, William F. Buckley, Jr., to destroy Liberty Lobby, the publisher of the Spotlight newspaper for which I worked for many years, until another CIA operative, Andrew Allen, orchestrated the demise of Liberty Lobby through yet another lawsuit. And, of course, as I mention, and as many of you know, probably from having read his book about the subject, Plausible Denial, anti-Zionist Jewish American attorney Mark Lane came to Liberty Lobby's defense in E. Howard Hunt's lawsuit and beat down E. Howard Hunt. He beat down, of course, William F. Buckley Jr. and saved the spotlight. It later was driven out of business. But needless to say, as a consequence of my association with Mark Lane and with Liberty Lobby, I got to have a lot of inside information and insights that helped me considerably when I wrote my own book on the Kennedy assassination. And I'm going to tell you tonight what I believe is the most comprehensive story about what really happened with E. Howard Hunt and the Kennedy assassination. But Lyndon Johnson didn't do it, folks. Stay tuned for more.
Hey, America, how does it feel to be flushed down the toilet of political intrigue and treachery into the sewer of slavery and bondage, where perverts and the godless write the rules? Our unborn children are murdered, our esteemed elders are euthanized, and everyone in between is numbered and tracked like criminals so they can be farmed by government, credit, healthcare organizations, like the chicken farmer farms his chickens. Have you had enough? Is it time to declare your liberty? It's your choice, you know. The only place to begin to declare your independence is to have enough food stored so that you never have to go stand in a bread line to give away the rest of your life or sell your children for a bowl of rice and a slice of bread. Call 800-409-5633. On the web, efoodsdirect.com. 800-409-5633.
Come on, Bill. 2 weeks ago, you were riding a bicycle. And today, you're showing up in your new car and telling me you're buying a house? What did you do, rob Bill Gates?
No, John, I didn't rob Bill Gates. What I did do is visit the website www.didyourobbillgates.com. That's where I learned how to make $3,000 to $9,000 each and every week, starting with my very first week. It's a simple program that does all the work for you. I'm already up to $25,000 just going on my third week.
Whoa. What was that website again?
It's www.didyourobbillgates.com. Now write this down, John. You should go there and learn how this program can help you become financially independent, too.
Thanks, Bill.
I'm going there right now. Check, please.
You got this one, right, Bill?
Sure, John. Don't forget, it's www.didyourobbillgates.com. Next time, you'll be buying me lunch.
Deal.
Have you heard of the universal antidote for poisoning? If you were thinking activated charcoal, you're right. Emergency wards around the world use activated charcoal as the antidote of choice for hundreds of poisons and as a detox for drug overdose. Because activated charcoal is rated safe and effective by the FDA, you can give it to your family, your pets, or livestock with no worry of negative side effects. If you have acid reflux, an infected wound, a spider bite, want to lower cholesterol, or control bad odors, activated charcoal is a safe, natural remedy. To learn more, visit buyactivatedcharcoal.com. Buyactivatedcharcoal.com carries a wide range of activated charcoal products. Come visit us at www.buyactivatedcharcoal.com. That's www.buyactivatedcharcoal.com. Or give us a call at 1-888-264-5568. Activated charcoal, a supernatural remedy for the 21st century.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. Michael Collins Piper here, coming to you from Washington, headquarters of American Free Press Newspaper. I am here on the Republic Broadcasting Network, courtesy of the all-natural cure for headaches. Headaches stay gone. You do know, I hope, where to check it out on the internet at headachesstaygone.com. You know, that's a great, great product, folks. And they bill it as another natural cure there, trying to keep secret from you. Well, if you're a listener to this program, it's no secret to you, and I'm sure a lot of you have tried it out. Those of you, by the way, if any of you have tried it out and have had some success with it, I hope you'll please give us a call some night and let me know. All right, well, here I am tonight, folks, discussing what I said last night is probably one of the few subjects that I can confidently say I know anything seriously in detail about, and that is the very specific circumstances surrounding the controversy of E. Howard Hunt's long-reputed involvement in the JFK assassination. And I'm going to tell you some things here tonight that are going to contradict what are a lot of common perceptions about the strange story of E. Howard Hunt, and I'm going to tell you a very interesting story about E. Howard Hunt, which completely, as in my perception, in my opinion, disproves a recent story that just began circulating on the internet that Howard Hunt believed that Lyndon Johnson was behind the JFK assassination, and you'll see why. In any case, folks, John F. Kennedy, as we all know, died in Dallas in 1963. No one outside the CIA, for the most part, had ever heard of E. Howard Hunt until the Watergate burglary in 1972, which erupted into major Watergate scandal, and it made Hunt an international celebrity. Prior to that, he was only known in the anti-Castro movement, although he was largely known by his pseudonym Eduardo. Although he had been a best-selling novelist at one point, although I think the mystery novels and suspense novels that he was writing in the 1950s, I believe at that time were written under pseudonyms. So, as I say, E. Howard Hunt was not well-known outside the ranks of the CIA and the anti-Castro Cuban community. But as you know, in the right after the Kennedy assassination, a Warren Commission report came out, and a fellow from New York who'd been a member of the New York State Legislature, also an attorney, civil rights attorney, an outspoken liberal in the classic sense of the word, Mark Lane, wrote a book called Rush to Judgment. And I'll tell you something about Mark Lane's book that Mark has told me privately, and I expect he will probably elaborate on in his upcoming memoirs. But when Mark wrote the book, Rush to Judgment, his approach was simply as a legal brief. This is essentially what it was. It was a legal brief showing that Lee Harvey Oswald could not have been guilty of the JFK assassination. It was very focused on that issue as a defense, more or less, for Lee Harvey Oswald, a posthumous defense for Oswald. But at the time, Mark was finally able to get an American publisher after a long, long effort of doing so. The book, of course, became a bestseller. What a lot of people don't know, though, is that Mark concluded the original draft of his book with an appendix, an essay, saying that in this book I haven't tried to say exactly who was behind the Kennedy assassination. I've focused on the story of Lee Harvey Oswald. But Mark wrote very definitively in his closing essay that he thought that a good starting point to find out who was involved or who was truly responsible for the Kennedy assassination would be to look towards the CIA. Well, Mark's editor said to him, "Mark, don't get into speculation like that. You've got a good, solid book. Let's take that out." It wasn't until many years later that Mark learned that his editor at that publishing company had been a longtime informant for the CIA. So obviously we don't know if that editor was working on behalf of the CIA when he urged that chapter be taken out, but needless to say, that's a fact. In any case, Mark's book set in motion, along with books of other people, a lot of controversy, people questioning the Warren Commission, and it became a mini industry, and a lot of people got bogged down in a lot of the details of how the crime was accomplished. And many, many people who didn't really have any knowledge about forensics and all sorts of things or ballistics were writing books and speculating and saying, well, the shots had to come from here, the shots came from there, it hit Kennedy in the forehead, it hit Kennedy in the back of the head. I mean, all sorts of differing opinions. Kind of what we see happening with the arguments over 9-1-1 today, folks, with the focus taken away from who really killed John F. Kennedy and why. And now here's where it starts to get interesting. In the early 1970s, there began a major push for a new investigation into the JFK assassination. And, of course, Mark Lane, anti-Zionist lawyer Mark Lane, was, in fact, one of those pushing for a new investigation. And they even, among the organizers in the congressional offices, they were suggesting that Mark actually head the investigation for Congress. He turned the offer down, however, because he said, "I'm so identified with the criticisms of the Warren Commission report that this investigation will never be perceived to be objective." So although he had a great forum there and he could have done it at the taxpayers' expense, he chose not to. In any case, the hearings began right after Watergate, essentially, in 75, 76. The House of Representatives convened a special inquiry, and it was around that time that the rumors began flying. E. Howard Hunt, who was best known as a Watergate burglar, they said, was one of the three tramps in Dallas. published by a small firm, written by two fellows, A.J. Weberman and Michael Canfield. And now, folks, here is where you see I'm getting old. The name of that book escapes me, but I think it was God, I'm getting old, folks. I even forget the name of the book. But it was by Weberman and Canfield. And in their book, Weberman and Canfield showed pictures of these three tramps in Dallas, and indeed there was a tramp in Dallas who bore a striking resemblance to E. Howard Hunt. In addition, there was another tramp who bore a striking resemblance to Hunt's longtime associate, Frank Sturgis, who was an American-born mercenary who had been involved in Cuba and involved in anti-Castro activities in Cuba. So this started to get a lot of attention, and considering the fact that E. Howard Hunt had been, it become quite famous, people really jumped on to this. Well, let me tell you something very interesting about how these gentlemen got their publicity and how they were, Weberman and Canfield, were aided behind the scenes on Capitol Hill in promoting this theory, because it all ties into what we're talking about here tonight. Mr. Weberman and Mr. Canfield had been well known as kind of radical journalists, but what people have long forgotten is that Mr. Weberman and Mr. Canfield, to the best of my understanding, also were involved, at least peripherally, with the Jewish Defense League, founded by Rabbi Meir Kahane. The Jewish Defense League, of course, is a very radical, terroristic organization fighting anti-Semitism. It's gone through several evolutions. But in any case, Mr. Weberman and Mr. Canfield did have their connections. Now, what's interesting further is that the book by Mr. Weberman and Mr. Canfield that came out promoting the idea that E. Howard Hunt was involved in the assassination was published by an African gentleman. But what makes the fact that it was published by an African gentleman, who I believe was from Ghana, all the more interesting, is the fact that this same African gentleman was also the publisher of books by Israeli Prime Minister David Ben-Gurion. And I hasten to tell you that during this same time frame, in the early 1970s, in Ghana, the Israeli Mossad was very, very active alongside the CIA. So here we have a Ghanaian publisher here in the United States operating, publishing a book implicating E. Howard Hunt as one of the key players in the JFK assassination. All right, interesting point. And in this context, what we've discussed thus far, it doesn't really mean too much. But guess what? When Weberman and Canfield went on Capitol Hill to try to promote their theory, guess who it was who opened the doors for them on Capitol Hill? One of the most powerful behind-the-scenes operatives on Capitol Hill, a gentleman who worked for Senator Henry M. Jackson, Democrat of Washington, a strong supporter of Israel. This gentleman was considered back in the 1970s, and it was written so in at least one book on Jews in American politics. This gentleman was considered one of the two most powerful advocates for Israel on Capitol Hill. His name was not very well known then, folks, but I'm here to tell you that gentleman who helped these two fellows associated with the Jewish Defense League was Richard Perle. Richard Perle, of course, is now well known as one of the orchestrators of the Iraq War, now pushing for a war against Iran. So here we had two fellows associated with the Jewish Defense League, which is, of course, an arm of the Mossad. This has been documented by Jewish historian Robert Friedman in his book on Meir Kahane. And we had Richard Perle, undoubtedly an Israeli operative on Capitol Hill, promoting the theory that E. Howard Hunt was involved in the JFK assassination. It gets deeper, folks. A lot more to come. Stay tuned.
Hi, this is Steve Shank with Fearless Radio and RBN, your only source for solutions to problems of troubled times. Do you realize that 3 years ago, the JMS Food Group warned people that there would come a time when if you didn't grow it yourself, or you already had it stored, you wouldn't dare eat it? Wait a minute. E. coli on our spinach and lettuce? That's our food you're talking about. You know where E. coli comes from? Feces, black water. In short, poop. We have to decide quickly to get all the food we're going to need. It's obvious that contamination can leave us hungry even before food shortages shut us down. For help ordering your food supply and protection from dishonest suppliers, call 800-409-5633. On the web, efoodsdirect.com. On the phone, 800-409-5633.
Would you enjoy a career where you pick your hours, work for who you want to, when you want to, as much as you want to? No one knows about this hidden career because there is no book, school, or teaching material available. Until now. Learn the trade of window painting. Window Genie is now offering a 3-day workshop on DVD that shows you how to reproduce art, text, and graphics professionally, even if you can't draw a stick man. Secrets, cheater techniques, shortcuts, tips, and tricks are all revealed. Recoup your investment in as little as one job and have a career for life. This training also gives you the skills to do regular sign work, indoor murals, and signage. Begin your new career today. Just call us at 780-457-7109 or visit us at windowgenie.com. Again, that's Window Genie, spelled JEANNIE.com.
We've all considered solar power at one time or another, and self-sufficiency will be your key to a better future. Ken Solar can help you get off the grid and become self-sufficient with solar power, and for a lot less than you would think. One of Ken's most popular items right now is the new solar power generator, for a lot less than you'd expect. This portable system can chop off nearly a third of your electric bill, a good start for any families out there wanting to get solar power for your home. Visit Ken's website at kensolar.com for free downloads, free videos, and how-tos, and of course, the new solar power generator. Use the coupon code RBN with your purchase and save an additional 10% off your order. Get a solar power generator now from kensolar.com at 239-677-3073. Again, that's 239-677-3073 or on the web at kensolar.com. Ken Solar, the home of all your solar needs.
Welcome back. Michael Collins, Piper here on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Courtesy of Headache Stay Gone, the all-natural cure for headaches. Try it if you have not. If you get a headache regularly or occasionally, this is a product that you do need. Stay away from those big products of the multinational chemical and drug companies. Okay, folks, we're talking about the very specific subject of E. Howard Hunt and the JFK assassination. We're not discussing where the bullets came from or whether it was really JFK's twin brother riding in the limousine or whether it was the driver who shot JFK. We're talking about E. Howard Hunt, famed as the Watergate burglar. Before the break, I mentioned a book written by Weberman and Canfield, who were associated with fellows in the Jewish Defense League and the Jewish Defense Organization and all these other alphabet groups of the Israeli lobby. That book, I remember during the break, was Coup d'etat in America. Coup d'etat in America. And by the way, one of our callers called in to give me that information, but I had remembered it in the meantime. I thank that caller who called in during the break. And I did make a mistake. I said that the publisher of that book was a Ghanaian. In fact, he was Nigerian, but that does not negate the fact that he was also the authorized publisher of the works of David Ben-Gurion, the Prime Minister of Israel. And, of course, Nigeria at that same time was also rife with Mossad and CIA infiltration. So, needless to say, we had these two fellows promoting this theory, and they were assisted on Capitol Hill by Richard Perle. Now, Richard Perle's primary avocation on Capitol Hill had always been Israel. So the very fact that this very powerful and influential man lent his good name and good offices to the intrigues of these two radical journalists who were associated with the Yippies, of all things, not to mention the Jewish Defense League, that is interesting in and of itself. But there were other things happening during this same time frame. This is all during the time when the House of Representatives is opening up its investigation of the reinvestigation, or supposedly so, of the JFK assassination. A mysterious letter popped up out of Mexico in what appeared to be Lee Harvey Oswald's handwriting. The letter was addressed to Dear Mr. Hunt. It made it clear that Mr. Hunt, whoever Mr. Hunt was, many people said it might have been Texas billionaire Haroldson Lafayette Hunt, H.L. Hunt. But a lot of people said, hey, this proves that Lee Harvey Oswald was connected to E. Howard Hunt of the CIA. Well, obviously, you know, there's a lot of controversy as to whether that letter was real or not. But needless to say, it's interesting that the letter came out of Mexico. And those of you who are familiar with the JFK assassination and the history of E. Howard Hunt will recall that Hunt had spent a lot of time in Mexico, in fact, with William F. Buckley Jr., and had been, in fact, a CIA station chief in Mexico. The CIA station in Mexico was also the very office of the CIA that was promoting, back in 1963, the idea that Lee Harvey Oswald was a lone assassin with alternately Soviet and/or Cuban connections, which, of course, no serious researcher believes today, although the John Birch Society does continue to maintain that Lee Harvey Oswald was a lone assassin and that he was probably working for the KGB. But needless to say, that's largely irrelevant in our discussion here tonight. But again, at the same time, these pro-Israel forces were promoting this theory that Hunt was involved in the JFK assassination. Then this mysterious letter pops up out of Mexico. And then things really got interesting. Word spread on Capitol Hill that there was an internal CIA memo from James Jesus Angleton, the CIA's chief of counterintelligence, a memo written to then-CIA director Richard Helms saying, essentially, E. Howard Hunt was in Dallas on November 22nd, and when this comes out, we're going to have to explain this. How are we going to do it? Well, the rumors spread all over Capitol Hill. It appeared as though E. Howard Hunt was, in fact, somehow connected in some way to the events in Dallas. And those who believe the CIA may have been responsible for that were getting very, very excited. The story of this memo took on a life of its own, however. Now, bear in mind that the source of this memo is James Angleton. James Angleton was the number three man in the CIA, but he was also the head of the Mossad desk and a very strong supporter of Israel. So here you have James Angleton dropping hints that there is the story circulating that Angleton was saying that Hunt was in Dallas. You have Richard Perle on Capitol Hill promoting the work of two journalists, so-called, with links to the Jewish Defense League, who are claiming that E. Howard Hunt was involved in the Kennedy assassination. Believe me, folks, at the time, this was very, very exciting to a lot of people. And James Angleton was determined to leak that story to the press. And he called in one of his top journalistic henchmen to get that story out there. And it gets thicker, folks. Stay tuned.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
imagine a firefly, simple and innocent, the ability to light the night sky. The ozone layer, unseen by the naked eye, life-sustaining. Our ocean, primordial soup, breathes life. Bring the wonders of nature home.
Sole salt lamps, handcrafted from million-year-old crystal salt, will gently ionize and purify your indoor air, helping you breathe easier. Nourish your mind and body with soothing colors for deep relaxation, and neutralize EMF radiation, protecting your family's health.
Visit SOLAYWellness.com for powerful, simple, life-sustaining Sole wellness products created from nature in harmony with nature.
Hi, I'm Isabella, founder of Sole Wellness. Visit us or call 866-497-0274. 866-497-0274.
The Idaho Observer is one of the last independent American presses and isn't afraid to print the truth. The Idaho Observer is a monthly 24-page hard copy newspaper in its fifth year of addressing important issues affecting all freedom-loving Americans. If you are concerned about the burgeoning national debt and the Orwellian police state growing up around you, then subscribe to the Idaho Observer. Only $25 for 12 monthly issues. Idaho Observer readers receive vital insight into events as they unfold. Our articles editorially emphasize activism and serve as a networking tool for like-minded individuals determined to make a difference. The Idaho Observer, printing what you need to be fully informed on issues that matter to real Americans. Go to idaho-observer.com or call 208-255-2307. That's 208-255-2307.
Hi, this is John Statler, and I want to tell you about a new shortwave receiver that we're really excited about. It's the Kato KA1103. And let me tell you, this radio has features and performance of receivers costing 2 to 3 times the price. Features include dual conversion phase lock loop tuner for continuous coverage of the entire shortwave band, AM, FM, and medium bands, 268 memory presets, single sideband reception with fine tuning control, signal strength, meter, battery, power indicator, DX local select, tone select, auto backlight screen, extra long telescopic antenna, line out and external line in jacks, and many other features too long to list. And when you purchase a Kato KA1103, you just don't get a radio, you get an entire radio package, including an external antenna, stereo earbuds, and an AC adapter, rechargeable batteries, and a nice carry pouch. So if you've been considering buying a shortwave receiver or would like to upgrade from your present radio, the KA1103 at just $110 plus $9 shipping is an outstanding value. Call us at 800-724-2719. 800-724-2719.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. Michael Collins Piper here talking about E. Howard Hunt and the JFK assassination. When we left for the break, folks, and I do have a couple callers, but I'm not going to be able to bring them up for a while because I want to get through this and give you all the details so you can make a final judgment for yourself. But needless to say, when we went to the break, I was discussing the fact that word leaked out that there was this memo circulating on Capitol Hill. It's very clear that it was James Angleton who leaked the word about his own memo. Some people say they saw the memo, but the memo was from James Angleton, who was the Mossad's man at the top levels of the CIA. Angleton called in his media henchman, Robert Corson, who then began to talk to journalists and spread the story around among the journalistic community. One of them who bit was Joe Trento. Joe Trento wrote a story for a small newspaper in Delaware talking about the possibility that E. Howard Hunt had been in Dallas. Victor Marchetti, a former CIA official, author of the best-selling book, The CIA and the Cult of Intelligence, got the story from Mr. Corson, and he wrote a story for The Spotlight. Now, up until that time, The Spotlight had avoided the JFK assassination like the plague because there were just so many disputing and competing theories that it just seemed the best thing to do. However, because of Victor Marchetti's expertise and recognition, and because of the fact that he obviously did have some sources inside the CIA, The Spotlight ran with the story and said not that E. Howard Hunt was involved in the JFK assassination, but rather that the CIA was going to hang E. Howard Hunt out to dry. In other words, they were essentially going to frame him for involvement in the Kennedy assassination. Well, to the shock of the spotlight, E. Howard Hunt filed suit against the spotlight. Spotlight said, "Hey, Mr. Hunt, we were coming to your defense saying you were going to be framed." Well, Hunt saw a quick buck to be made, and he brought the spotlight to court. Even though the spotlight offered to sit down and give him a whole interview and do a whole spread in the paper explaining his side of the story. No, Hunt and his backers wanted to bring down the spotlight. Well, the spotlight lost in federal court in Miami where Hunt filed the suit. $650,000 judgment. Well, only because of a quirk of fate. Because the judge had erred in some of his instructions to the jury very clearly so, the case was sent back to trial. And at that time, thank God, anti-Zionist attorney Mark Lane, who was already well known for his inquiries into the JFK assassination, was brought in as Liberty Lobby's attorney. Mark didn't agree with Liberty Lobby on a lot of things, but he was introduced to Liberty Lobby by former Israeli Haviv Sheber, who had turned anti-Zionist and who became a strong supporter of Liberty Lobby. Haviv Sheber brought Mark Lane to Liberty Lobby. Mark Lane took the case, and he said, "Folks, in the previous trial, the spotlight agreed that E. Howard Hunt was not involved in the JFK assassination." He says, "But in this trial, folks, I'm going to prove to you that the CIA was involved in the JFK assassination." And during that trial, E. Howard Hunt was brought on the stand. And during that time on the stand, E. Howard Hunt told very contradictory stories about where he was on November 22nd. He even admitted under oath that his own children, who he said he'd been with on the day of the assassination, had questions as to whether or not their father was involved in the Kennedy assassination. And yet Hunt was saying, "Well, kids, don't forget you were with me." But he admitted under oath on the stand before a jury that his own children had doubts about it. Well, what's interesting, folks, is that Mark Lane was able to bring in a witness, and she actually didn't even appear in court. Her testimony was read into the record before the jury. And this was a woman, Marita Lorenz, who had been a former CIA operative, who had actually ended up been the mistress of Fidel Castro. She testified that several days before the JFK assassination, she arrived in Dallas in the company of Frank Sturgis, the CIA mercenary, the CIA-connected mercenary, and a number of anti-Castro Cubans, and that they settled in at a small hotel, a small motel in Dallas. And while they were there, they were met by two people, who she, of course, later recognized as to be Jack Ruby, who killed Lee Harvey Oswald, the president's accused assassin, and a guy named Eduardo, who she knew at the time and she knew later to be E. Howard Hunt, and that Hunt brought money to Sturgis and these anti-Castro Cubans. This was a day or two before the JFK assassination, folks. In other words, folks, listen to this very carefully. Disregard the rumors. I'm here to tell you the facts. Miss Lorenz said that Hunt had been there a day or so before the assassination. That means that Hunt could then have returned to Washington and been there in Washington at the time Kennedy was assassinated. But Hunt, of course, made a fool of himself on the stand and made himself appear all the more suspicious, to the point, in the end, that the jury cleared the spotlight of the libel charges, revoked Hunt's $650,000 judgment, and Hunt ended up having to pay Liberty Lobby some $15,000 in legal fees. But needless to say, her testimony did not necessarily implicate Hunt in the actual crime in Dallas, as though he were there firing shots or that he was in Dealey Plaza. But he was, according to her testimony, connected to people. Jack Ruby, who of course is widely believed to have been part of the conspiracy, he was certainly involved in the cover-up through his murder of Lee Harvey Oswald, and Frank Sturgis, who later admitted to Marita Lorenz, according to her testimony, that he had been involved in the Kennedy assassination, and later Cuban intelligence did an investigation, and they determined that Frank Sturgis had been in charge of communications in Dealey Plaza. Not that he was one of the gunmen, but that he had been involved in the communications. Sturgis also later wrote in a private handwritten letter that he had been involved in the JFK assassination, and guess who he said he was working for? He said he was working for James Angleton. I saw a very carefully redacted version of that letter at one point, and it's very, very clear that this was Sturgis's handwriting, if my source was to be believed, and it's very clear that he was referring to James Angleton as a person who he had been working for. Well, what's interesting is that Angleton himself subsequently hinted to the other journalist that I mentioned previously, Joe Trento, that in fact it was Angleton himself who sent E. Howard Hunt to Dallas. See, it's all getting very circular here, folks. And here's something else that I determined later on, actually after my own book, Final Judgment, had been written, in which book I outline a lot of these details and more that I've been talking about here on the show. It turns out Marie Lorenz, who provided the key testimony that basically helped the Spotlight win that libel suit, thanks to the skillful work of anti-Zionist attorney Mark Lane, it turns out that Marie Lorenz had not only been working for the CIA, but over the years she had had connections to Israel's intelligence service, the Mossad. And you see, Miss Lorenz had originally told her story about E. Howard Hunt to the House Assassinations Committee. They disregarded her testimony, though. She told this story about Hunt's involvement at the very same time that James Angleton was leaking the word that Hunt had been in Dallas, at the very same time that James Angleton was leaking the word through the press and in ultimately through the pages of the Spotlight that Hunt had been in Dallas. It also happened at the same time that Richard Pearl, Israel's top agent on Capitol Hill, was helping two journalists, Weberman and Canfield, spread the story about Hunt's involvement in the assassination. So it seems, at least to me, based upon my, and I would say informed judgment, that the story of Hunt's involvement in the assassination was deliberately leaked by sources who had axes to grind. They were going to make Hunt the fall guy, just as the Spotlight had originally interpreted it. He was an easy patsy. Now, since that time, there have been a lot of indications that there may have been a dummy assassination attempt being set up. In other words, they were going to fire shots at President Kennedy to convince him that action was necessary to invade Cuba. This dummy assassination attempt, however, according to and there are many sources pointing in the direction of such an attempt, there are indications that E. Howard Hunt was the one who was setting up the dummy assassination attempt, but then real shots were fired in Dallas and President Kennedy died. So E. Howard Hunt, in many respects, in my judgment, was a patsy. And later, of course, he was a very convenient patsy. What makes this all the more interesting in the end is that some years ago, a Canadian journalist was interviewing E. Howard Hunt for a series of articles, and his primary interest was the Kennedy assassination. All the time he was interviewing Hunt, however, he was in private contact with Mark Lane, and Mark was feeding this journalist questions to ask Hunt. Well, you know what Hunt finally said after it became obvious to Hunt that the journalist's interest was in the Kennedy assassination? He finally said, "Look, I know what you're interested in." He says, "If you really want to know what I know about the Kennedy assassination and what really happened," he said, "I need $14 million, and I'll tell you the whole story, at least what I know." Well, the journalist was excited. This could have been a Pulitzer Prize for him. Well, no one was willing to come up with $14 million, but the journalist asked Hunt, "Why do you need $14 million? And he said, "Well, that's what I've calculated it would take for me to be able to go away and live safely with security guards that I could trust, because if I tell the truth about what really happened in the Kennedy assassination, I will need that much to spend the rest of my life safely. Well, I'm here to tell you, folks, that is absolute proof that E. Howard Hunt did not believe that Lyndon Johnson was behind the JFK assassination, because Lyndon Johnson was long dead. And this crazy story put out by Barr McClellan, who's the father of George Bush's former press secretary, is just nonsense. And Hunt would not have needed $14 million to protect himself from the dead Lyndon B. Johnson. So E. Howard Hunt was probably not in Dallas on the day of the JFK assassination, but he was definitely involved in intrigues surrounding the assassination. He may have been part of a group, which actually some sources may have suggested may have actually been being run right out of the White House itself to set up a fake attempt on President Kennedy's life that could be traced back to Cuba for a pretext for an invasion. But in the meantime, outside forces came in, and real shots were fired in Dallas. Now, the late Gary Ween wrote a book called There's a Fish in the Courthouse, and in my book, Final Judgment, I quote extensively from Gary's book. And Gary learned from Hollywood actor Audie Murphy that there was somebody in Dallas who knew what happened on the day of the JFK assassination, or he had bits and pieces of it. And Audie Murphy introduced Gary Ween to this person. And guess who it was, folks? It was John Tower, United States Senator from Texas, a Republican. John Tower told Gary Ween, in the presence of Audie Murphy, that E. Howard Hunt had been set up, that Hunt was part of this dummy group setting up a dummy assassination attempt. There was no plan to kill Kennedy, but outside forces intervened, and President Kennedy was killed. Now, there have been some new research that has come out. A fellow by the name of Wim Dankbar has written a book. There have been other sources that have come out over the years that have said there were actual teams in Dallas to protect President Kennedy from what they knew to be an impending assassination attempt. All of these things taken together, in my view, do very, very clearly implicate Israel's intelligence service and their allies here in the United States in attempting to misdirect the public and private inquiries into the JFK assassination. In other venues, in my book on this program, I've talked about Israel's motivations, other Mossad connections to people involved, not to mention the fact that Frank Sturgis himself had worked for the Mossad and Israel going back to the late 1940s. So you see, while there is very, very good reason to say, yes, E. Howard Hunt definitely knew things about the JFK assassination, the latest story that's come out saying that in his book, which is to be released in April, now that he's dead, interestingly enough, he says that Lyndon Johnson certainly had the contacts and could have made it possible, could have made it happen. But E. Howard Hunt didn't need $14 million to protect himself from the dead Lyndon B. Johnson. I don't think we'll ever really know now what E. Howard Hunt knew about the JFK assassination. And, you know, frankly, he was a loyal CIA man through and through. Even if he thought it was just the CIA alone who had been involved in the assassination, he would have never said it. And I guarantee you that he probably wouldn't have pinned the Mossad. Unless, of course, he got that $14 million. But he didn't get that $14 million. Folks, that's what I can tell you, what I know about E. Howard Hunt. Now, we do have some callers. We have just enough time to get one of those callers in, maybe both of them. And so I'm going to go to Jim from Texas. Jim, come on up.
Yeah, Mike, I might take you down memory lane here, but I remember in the 1984-85 period where the Spotlight magazine, the first time I ever heard of Richard Pearl, they had a big article on him there, and it pretty well exposed him for what he was. I believe he was still working for Scoop Jackson at the time.
But in fact, that's probably the article I wrote. I wrote
it. It could have been. I don't remember the author.
I wrote a two-page spread on Richard Pearl, yeah.
But I remember the article clearly, and Richard Pearl, in explaining what he was, which is famous for the Jackson-Vanik Amendment,
mm-hmm.
which allowed the United States to spend any amount of money, any amount of anything, in order to get the maximum number of Jews out of Russia into Israel, if I'm not mistaken.
You're
that was
absolutely
the Jackson-Vanik
right.
Amendment. So I just thought it just hit me when you were talking about Richard Pearl tonight, the first time I ever heard of him.
That's
was in the spotlight.
I wrote that very article that you're talking about. It was a
well, congratulations. You awoken me to Richard Pearl.
Well, that means...
The swell fellow that he is now, mind you.
I accomplished one thing in my life now, and I can say I have a public witness to it.
I don't remember if he called him the Prince of Darkness at the time, but...
Well, that's who he is, and he remains so to this day. Jim,
absolutely.
If you want to hang on, please
sure.
do. All right, folks, I've done a lot of talking here tonight. I hope you actually learned something. Stay tuned. We're going to have a wrap-up here in a few minutes. Things are not always as they seem.
Hey, America, how does it feel to be flushed down the toilet of political intrigue and treachery into the sewer of slavery and bondage, where perverts and the godless write the rules? Our unborn children are murdered. Our esteemed elders are euthanized, and everyone in between is numbered and tracked like criminals so they can be farmed by government, credit, healthcare organizations, like the chicken farmer farms his chickens. Have you had enough? Is it time to declare your liberty? It's your choice, you know. The only place to begin to declare your independence is to have enough food stored so that you never have to go stand in a bread line to give away the rest of your life or sell your children for a bowl of rice and a slice of bread. Call 800-409-5633. On the web, efoodsdirect.com. 800-409-5633.
Are you paying exorbitant amounts of interest to your mortgage lender? We as Americans have been led down a path of paying excessive amounts of interest to the lending institutions. Stop paying tens of thousands of dollars in mortgage interest and start saving. Our financial experts have spent 2 years and about $2 million on a revolutionary interest reduction solution that will show you how to pay off 100% of your mortgage and other debt in as little as 8 to 11 years with no change to your current lifestyle or spending habits. No increase to your monthly mortgage payments. No refinancing and no out-of-pocket expense. That's right. Take 19 to 22 years off your 30-year mortgage. This is not a bi-weekly payment program or a debt roll-down program. It's much more. Sound too good to be true? Find out just how good. Visit interestreductionsolutions.com or call 1-800-281-5094. That's 1-800-281-5094. Ask about our free DVD and financial analysis report.
Many Bible prophecies written thousands of years ago have been fulfilled in the past 100 years. Unknown by most people, even Bible-reading Christians, major end-time prophecies are being fulfilled today, including the one-world government, the one-world religion, the 10-nation confederacy of Daniel and Revelation, the mark of the beast, or 666. Speculation abounds about these ancient prophecies and what they might mean today. Now, one of the most foremost scholars on geopolitics, Dr. Michael Kaufman, who has stopped the ratification of international treaties in the U.S. Senate, has just released a DVD called World Events and Prophecy. His DVD explains how these and other major prophecies are being fulfilled today. Order your copy of World Events and Prophecy. It's only $20 plus shipping and handling at discerningtoday.org or call toll-free 877-271-7639. Don't be caught off guard. Order your copy of World Events and Prophecy at discerningtoday.org.
Michael Collins Piper here, coming to you courtesy of Headache Stay Gone. Find it on the internet at headachestaygone.com. We just have a couple minutes here. Jim from Texas, if you have a further comment, fire away. Otherwise, I'd like to move on and catch James from Texas.
Yeah, I'd like to say that hasn't James K. Angleton been recently exposed as a complete Mossad agent
or
a card-carrying communist or possibly both?
He's been dead for years. Yeah, Angleton was a Mossad man through and through, and oddly enough, he may have also been the very mole, the very Soviet mole inside the CIA at the time he was blaming everybody else for being the Soviet mole.
Hey, about 75% of the OSS, original OSS, were all Soviet agents.
That's exactly right, and that's where James Angleton...
I mean, there's nothing... It's like going to a trial where your judge is Jewish, the defense attorney is Jewish, the prosecutor is Jewish, and the jury is Jewish. What are you going to get for a verdict?
I'm not going to tell you.
That's what it all boils down to, really, technically.
All right, Jim, let me move on here and try to bring up James.
Mm-hmm.
James, only got a couple minutes here, but glad you hung on.
Hello. Hello.
Yes.
Michael Collins, pleased to meet you.
Nice to have you aboard.
John F. Kennedy once said that change is the law of life, and those who look only to the past or present are certain to miss the future. That's good advice, and we will need to heed it. It is a natural human response to worry about change. Sometimes we fear and even dread it. Why is that? Why is this reluctance to embrace change? The well-known science writer and biochemist Isaac Asimov offered some interesting insight as to why it is that we resist change. He asserts that it is because we fear the process of re-education. Adults in particular have invested endless hours of learning and growing accustomed to inches and miles, to February's 28 days, to night and death with their silent letters, and to all the rest of the familiar with which we are comfortable. To introduce something altogether new means to begin all over, to become ignorant and possibly vulnerable again, and to run the old risk of failing to learn. The spirit of John F. K. still lives.
James, I thank you for that quote. That's a very interesting quote from Asimov there. And, you know, that's I guess, what I was talking about here in the show tonight, that there's a lot of misinformation and misperceptions about E. Howard Hunt. And, you know, I'm not saying he was a good fellow. I'm not saying he was an absolute patsy. He may have even been involved in the plot to kill JFK, but there's absolutely much more to the story. And when you look at the motivations of these people who were promoting this idea that Hunt was involved in the JFK assassination, it raises the question, why? So I thank you for that call, James. Very interesting input there. I appreciate that.
You're welcome. Great.
All right. Well, folks, I hope you found this broadcast tonight interesting. People seem to still be interested in the JFK assassination. Of course, it's something that I have written about and talked about, and probably will do so for a long time. I know there's a lot of people say, oh, forget about JFK, focus on 9/11 or 9-1-1, however you want to describe it. And you know what? With that having been said, I'm going to mention this, that I'm going to talk about 9-1-1 tomorrow night. So I hope you'll stay tuned. That is, stay tuned here tonight, listen in to Rick Adams, and then come back here tomorrow night, and we're going to talk about 9-1-1 very seriously. What we need to do about 9-1-1, and it's not what's being done about 9-1-1. Going to upset a lot of people with what I have to say tomorrow night, but I'm going to say it, and I'll take your calls. Have a good evening. Michael Collins Piper. I don't have a headache, but if I did, I'd take Headache Stay Gone. Check it out. HeadacheStayGone.com on the internet. Thanks for listening, folks.